divorce. Even thinking about getting a divorce can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker. Now, many people own their own home, maybe not all outright, but they do have a mortgage, and their home is usually the single largest asset that a couple has. It also often represents the bulk of a couple's wealth. So that means deciding what's going to happen to your marital home is central to your divorce, and a major deciding factor in what's going to happen to them is the mortgage. And whether you can get financing and the timing of that, and it's complicated. And I hate to tell you this, but it often is actually a lot more complicated than you even think. So joining us today, my guest is Jody Bruins. Jody is a certified divorce lending professional, and she's going to help us understand some of the complexity involved in divorcing your mortgage. Welcome, Jody.
Hi, thank you, Mandy.
Jody is also president and founder of Divorce Lending and Real Estate Association, and she created the designation Certified Divorce Lending Professional. And I thought we could kick off, Jody, with I wanted to ask you why you found it necessary to create that title. What led you to that? What made you believe that it was needed?
Well, I have been working with mortgages for 28 years, and a lot of my focus has been with divorcing clients. And when I see these files come across my desk, when they come from like a different lender or some, you know, a different mortgage company, there are so many errors that are made simply because there's a lack of knowledge how, you know, across the entire board, how family law, tax law, real estate and mortgage financing are all connected. And I thought there needed to be some kind of an educational platform for the mortgage industry to help the mortgage lender, the attorneys, but most importantly, the divorcing clients. So that's where it came from.
Okay, excellent. And I agree. It just, the more that I hear about this topic, the more complicated it seems to get. So,
yep.
Let's start by talking about a situation where, let's say I'm getting divorced. I want to stay in the marital home. I have a great mortgage. It's a great interest rate. The payments I can afford them on my own without the help of my spouse. Now, I'm thinking I could just take that mortgage over. And I've actually worked with clients who've said, I'm just going to start, you know, I'll just keep making the payments on the mortgage. But it's not quite that simple, is it, Judy?
No, it's not. And it can be, though. You know, if both parties agree, you know, and both parties trust that the person retaining the residence is going to make those mortgage payments and they qualify, they can keep that mortgage in place. The risk is, however, that typically both spouses are jointly liable on the mortgage. So if for some reason that spouse that keeps the home misses a mortgage payment, then it's going to affect the credit of both of them. You know, so they can retain it, keep the mortgage, you know, keep that great rate, et cetera, but it does not release the departing spouse from the liability of the mortgage. You know, even if they get a divorce, and so the judge says, you know, wife is keeping the home, she's going to continue to make the mortgage payment, a court cannot, you know, remove the vacating spouse from that legal obligation to the mortgage company either. So there is that risk there, you know, but at the same time, if they're both very credit conscious and they trust that the other person is not going to screw up the credit, they can leave it there, but it's not usually advisable.
And is there such a thing as like a calling up the mortgage company and saying, you know, we're getting divorced and my spouse is moving out, I just want to keep this mortgage as it is, and just, can you just take his name off the mortgage?
No. That would be easy, right?
Yes.
there is such a thing called release of liability, and it honestly depends on who the lender is. If it's your typical servicer, you know, or if the mortgage is actually held by one of the bigger banks, and let's say that there's huge amount of equity in the home, great credit, everything, or they have like a really strong relationship with that bank, very, very, very seldom they might do a release of liability. I have never seen it happen, though, because the banks just kind of say, no way. And you know, we've got you both on the hook here.
And you've been doing this for 28 years.
Yeah.
Right. So, and for
you know, and the thing is, too, is many people think, well, I'll just do a quit claim. I'll remove him from title, and then he's released from it. That is one of the biggest mistakes out there is, just because you remove somebody from title does not remove them from the mortgage. Two entirely separate issues there.
Right. I'm glad that you raised that point. So good to remember that. And I think for most people, if you're the person who's moving out of the home, you're going to want to be buying another home or probably will want to buy another home. And if your name stays on that mortgage, doesn't that affect your ability to get another mortgage for another home?
It depends. If it is written actually in the final divorce settlement agreement or in the marital settlement agreement that, you know, the wife is retaining the marital home, she's responsible for the mortgage payment, the taxes, the insurance, everything, it's what's considered a court-ordered contingent liability. And mortgage lenders are not required to count that debt then against the new borrowing spouse if it's written in the divorce settlement agreement correctly.
Okay, so that's where you want to be careful about how the settlement agreement is written.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. Another question for you. And I have two coaching clients where this is relevant right now. And it's funny how they've both come up this week. But have not filed for divorce yet. The spouse wants to keep the home, and my client's okay with that. But they want to go ahead and refinance the mortgage because the rates are great right now, and they want to get this done. So they're willing to buy out the equity that my client has in the house, but they're nervous about doing this before getting divorced, or the title company is asking for a statement from them that the debt, as far as the house is concerned, has been resolved. Is this a typical situation that comes up, or should people wait until their divorce is final before they do any refinancing?
You know, it is very, very typical that
really?
A lot of times clients want to have things taken care of prior to even filing the divorce petition.
Right.
But there's a lot of, it's not black and white, you know, there's a lot of gray area there. And what I would say is, for instance, when I work with my divorcing client and they want to take care of the equity buyout, et cetera, right before they even file a petition, it's like I said, it could go off in all kinds of different directions, but typically they can do that if they have not filed the divorce petition. And they can do it one of two ways. They can do it as a straight cash out refinance. And depending on the loan to value, you know, of the mortgage compared to the value, it may not affect their rate at all. And then all the vacating spouse has to do, or the non-borrowing spouse at this point, we'll call them, they're just going to have to sign the quitclaim deed at closing. They're not required to sign it prior to closing for loan approval.
Okay.
And if they are, though, if they have filed a petition, they're not going to be able to close that loan until the divorce is final. Because as you know, as well as I do, anything can change during the divorce process.
That was going to be my next question, actually, as to, you know, if people have filed, do they have to, will the mortgage lender make them wait until the divorce is final?
Typically, they do, unless you can get, you know, a temporary order or, you know, a notarized letter from both spouses saying that, you know, we've finalized our, you know, the division of the property. But typically, the lender only requires that type of a letter if the petition has been filed. Because if they haven't even filed a petition, there's no way around doing it as a cash out refinance. You know, because they're actually trying to, because for instance, I know this is kind of a tangent, but it's the reason I need to explain it, is there's a difference between a cash out mortgage and an equity buyout mortgage. Okay. A cash out mortgage is where somebody files for a refinance and they're saying, hey, Jody, I need to take out, you know, $50,000 worth of equity for my home. There's no questions as to what they're going to do with the money, et cetera. If they come to me and they say, hey, Jody, you know, Dave and I are going to get a divorce. I need to, you know, give him $50,000 for his share of equity. There's a, it's called an equity buyout, where you get rock bottom interest rates as though you were taking no cash out. You know, so there is there's a completely different set of pricing for interest rates as well as access to the equity depending upon if it's a cash out or an equity buyout. So if you were to come to me and say, you know, Dave and I were contemplating getting a divorce. We have not filed yet. However, we want to go ahead and refinance the mortgage in my name, take the cash out for him. It will be considered a cash out mortgage. You can't do an equity buyout because there's no divorce petition or any divorce proceedings to back up that equity buyout.
Okay.
You know, so I would be confused in the title company. The title company would never be asking for that letter. You know, I would think it was the lender.
Okay.
But at the same time, it just seems kind of odd to me that if they have not filed a petition yet, why they would allow them to do what we consider an equity buyout. Because let's say that they do this equity buyout, you know, for the lower interest rates, and next month they reconcile.
Right.
You know, there was no supporting document that it was an equity buyout because of a divorce. You know, so it gets very convoluted. I said,
yes.
Earlier, it's like opening this very ugly can of worms.
But what you've just explained is something that I wasn't aware of, that these two different types of refinancing existed. There's the cash out refinance and the equity buyout. Now, would most lenders, would know about the difference there? If people who are getting divorced call a mortgage lender and say, I'm getting divorced, I need to buy out my partner, is the lender automatically going to go to that equity buyout? Or is it important for somebody who's wanting that to actually say, I'm looking for an equity buyout?
You know, unfortunately, I would like to say that all licensed mortgage originators know all of these guidelines. But that is one of the very reasons why we created the Certified Divorce Lending Professional Certification Program, because that is the number one lender error when working with divorcing clients.
Wow.
Because your typical loan officer, if a borrower calls and they say, you know, hey, I'm getting a divorce, I need to pull out $50,000 cash out of my, or equity out of my home. Most lenders automatically just say, okay, well, that's a cash out refinance because you're taking cash out of the home. And it's not. And interest rates for a cash out mortgage can be typically a minimum of a quarter of a point on average higher than the interest rate you would pay on your standard no cash out or equity buyout refinance. And you take that quarter of a point and you amortize that over 30 years, you know, and some of these mortgages are $300,000-$400,000. You know, that's a huge mistake.
Right. Okay. And that's the number one mistake you see. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's a simple one, but it's the number one error all the time.
But to qualify for that equity buyout, all of the money in that you're getting financing for has to be paid to the leaving spouse.
Yes.
So if I wanted an extra $15,000 to put a new roof on my house, that I can't do as an equity buyout.
You cannot. You can add that additional money on there, but it will automatically flip it to a cash out refinance.
Okay.
Yes. So no money can come back at all, not even like $10. So the lender has to be very careful when they send the figures to the title company to make sure that everything is accounted for, because you can't imagine sometimes if you're sitting at the closing table and, you know, you're doing the buyout of your spouse, you're kind of disgruntled anyway, right? Because you're getting a divorce.
Yeah, right.
And all of a sudden, he's getting, you know, $500 more than he was supposed to just because there was a miscalculation in your fees. You know, it just doesn't work that way. So,
right.
Yeah, and I'll tell you the other thing that I'll just throw this in there, and it's usually a big item of contention as well, and that happens after the mortgage has closed, or even if the divorcing couple sell their marital home and that mortgage is paid off. There is almost always a refund check issued from that current mortgage lender that we're paying off, whether it's a sale or a refinance. And that refund check is usually, you know, a couple hundred dollars worth of, you know, overpaid interest or the balance of their escrow accounts. And that can be anywhere from, you know, $1,000 up to 6 months worth of property taxes
right.
that they've been holding.
Right.
Well, if the spouses were jointly held on that mortgage, that refund check comes back as a joint check. It's not going to be paid to the person who was awarded the house. You know, and so you get a refund check that's a joint check that's for, like, say, $5,000. And then all of a sudden you have to have both spouses sign it. They need to understand up front that there's a potential of this refund check and who's going to get it or how you're going to split it. Because I had one client in California. Her divorce was very bitter. They would not speak. Everything had to go through attorneys. And all of a sudden she got a refund check of like $9,000 because of their escrow account. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Can you fix this?" And I go, "No, it came from the other, you know, mortgage company," and she had to go back through the attorneys and fight to get that check signed.
Right.
And so that's just another thing that people overlook, and they don't realize that this refund check is going to come.
And so that's something else that has to be taken care of in that financial settlement agreement.
Yeah. Yep. Right. And nobody really thinks about it. So that's one of the reasons it usually becomes an item of contention afterwards.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. So the only way to really kind of look at what that balance is going to be is on everybody's mortgage statements every month, there's always an escrow account balance. So they always can be very mindful of this dollar amount is in here. You know, how are we going to take care of that when it comes back?
Right. Right.
So,
wow,
yeah.
That's another really great tip, Jody. Jody, let's take a break for a moment. Listeners, I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce, and today we're talking about divorcing your mortgage. It's definitely not as simple as you might think, and we all wish it was simpler. My guest today is Jody Bruins. Jody is a certified divorce lending professional. She's the president and founder of the Divorce Lending and Real Estate Association. And Jody, you have an amazing, helpful booklet called Divorcing Your Mortgage, Top 10 Things You Should Know. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about that book and how they can get it?
Sure. I put this booklet together I kind of compiled, you know, the most frequent questions that I'm asked. I'm asked by the spouses, the divorcing clients themselves, or the divorce attorneys during discussion. And I thought this would be a great resource for divorcing clients if there is a mortgage involved, you know, just kind of cover, you know, briefly things that they don't often think about, such as, you know, am I going to be able to use child support and maintenance as income, or, what do I do if I have capital gains on my home? You know, just common questions that I think are, you know, they will answer a lot of questions for them up front. So I put this little booklet together. It's accessible. You can download it from my personal website, which is Jody Bruns, B-R-U-N-S, and it's Jody with a Y, so JodyBruns.com. It's right on there. They can download it as a PDF, and I think it's a really, really good resource for them.
Great. Well, thank you for sharing that, Jody.
Sure.
So the next topic I wanted to move on to is talking about what are the typical income requirements for qualifying for refinancing or mortgages, because I know from when you and I have talked, that's another important thing that people need to be aware of when they're structuring their settlement agreement.
Yes. Well, so there's a big difference to a mortgage lender in the difference between income and what we consider as qualified income. So a lot of times, right after a divorce is final, a divorcing client may call and say, you know what, I need to refinance or I want to buy a new home. I'm getting $8,000 a month, you know, total income. And so I sit there and I say, that's great. You know, let's chunk it down, you know, and break out this $8,000. So let's say, for instance, that $2,000 of it comes from a job, you know, straight employment. And we can verify, you know, they've had experience, they've maintained the job, et cetera. And so I can use that as qualified income. Then let's say that they're getting $2,000 a month in spousal maintenance, okay? There are requirements to utilize any kind of maintenance, whether it's maintenance or child support, before it's considered qualified income. You have to now show 6 months of receipt of these payments on a consistent basis in order for it to be considered qualified income. Now, on top of showing 6 months of receipt, we have to have documentation, which is typically the marital settlement agreement, that both of these incomes, the maintenance and the child support, are going to continue for 3 years after the date of loan application. So that if they just got divorced and they've only received, you know, 1 month's receipt of both maintenance and child support, they cannot use that income to qualify for another 5 months because you have to show 6 months of receipt. That's for a conforming loan. If they're doing FHA, we have to have 3 months. But still, you know, most people think they have to, you know, take care of this within 60 days, and you just can't do that. You can't use that income. And then,
can I just ask you,
let's say,
if you had a temporary support order and that you could show the spousal support had been paid for 3 months prior to the divorce being final, would they consider that?
Well, it has to be worded correctly because child support and alimony cannot be considered voluntary.
Right.
You know, so if they have temporary orders that say, you know, the ex-husband, for instance, is going to pay the ex-wife, you know, $3,000 a month in maintenance, that letter still has to say that it will continue for 3 years.
Right.
You know, it can't just be a temporary agreement that says, you know, he's paying it. So if
thinking that at the time that they applied, they could show that it had already been paid for this amount of time because of the temporary orders that were in place before the divorce became final.
Yep. So as long as there was temporary orders, you know, showing that one spouse had to pay that amount,
right,
then we can use that previous payment.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what I'm hearing from that then is I know that in some of the agreements I've seen, the spouse who's keeping the marital home is required to refinance it within a certain period, or the house has to be sold.
Yeah.
So then you're going to want to make sure that you give yourself ample time to qualify for a mortgage.
Yes. And, you know, and that's another, you know, part of the disconnect between, I always call them the puzzle pieces of divorce.
Yeah.
You know, you have the puzzle piece of family law, tax law, real estate, mortgage, and they're so connected, but they're so disconnected because, unfortunately, you know, attorneys, it's not their job to know mortgage guidelines, right?
Right.
So they, you know, work out the settlement agreement. They say, okay, well, wife is going to keep the marital home, refinance it, and she has to complete this within 60 days. And then you turn around and the majority of her income is from, you know, settlement, you know, whether it's child support or maintenance, and she can't, you know, do that. And there are some times where, you know, you don't want your client to be held in contempt because they did not follow through with the court order. But yet at the same time, nobody knew that it wasn't, you know, she couldn't do it, you know,
right.
And that's just, that's part of my dilemma is, you know, I reach out and I teach classes to, you know, divorce attorneys and financial planners, mediators, you know, on this very subject, trying to connect, you know, those dots to make it easier, you know, for the divorcing clients in the end, because our goal is to set them up for success.
Right.
You know, and when all the parties involved, you know, they don't have, you know, and I always tell the attorneys, you know, it's not your job to know mine. And, you know, you shouldn't know how to do mortgages, but you should have a mortgage professional who really, really understands divorce lending, you know, a certified divorce lending professional on your professional divorce team. Because you have financial planners, you have tax accountants, you know, that you bring in, you know, if that case actually requires that. Well, if there's a mortgage involved, you need to be calling someone, you know, call me in to set that settlement so that I can look at the scenarios, make sure that things are worded correctly in the right part of the settlement agreement so that we can read it correctly from the underwriting side and, you know, get it handled. Because
And Jody, I'm working, you know, I do a lot of work with people who are pro se, who are don't have attorneys representing them. And so I think that there's a danger there that they leave it too late to get involved. They've drafted the paperwork that they use from the state website isn't specific. It doesn't give them any warning about this, and they think that everything's fine. So what I'm hearing you say is, don't wait until your divorce is, you've filed your paperwork and you've filed your settlement agreement to have a conversation with a mortgage lender. If you know that you want to keep your home or to buy a new home, then have that conversation sooner so that you know what the requirements are that you're having, that you're going to face. And then you can adjust your settlement accordingly.
You know, I always tell them, and I tell the divorcing clients, the mediators, the attorneys, you know, you need to look over, you know, the scenario basically with the lender. Because if you don't, and you say, okay, well, you're divorced, here's your divorce settlement agreement, go call a lender, then that lender, that mortgage professional, has to deal with the cards that are dealt.
Right.
And that is usually when nothing can be done,
right.
You know, because it wasn't worded correctly in the divorce settlement agreement, or, you know, it's in the wrong part of the divorce settlement agreement, or you can't use the income as qualified income, you know, and those expectations aren't set correctly. So it's just, it's an educational thing. You know, we need to get out there, the certified divorce lending professionals, and we need to educate, you know, the remainder of the divorce professionals, you know, that there are specific requirements and guidelines, and we want to make sure that everyone walks away whole.
Right.
So it's challenging. It's rewarding when you see a success thing like that. You know, when you have a, you know, divorcing client to walk away somewhat happy rather than, you know, just disgruntled even more because
they're
angry that somebody can't do this.
Right. You want them, both parties, to walk away knowing that they've structured their settlement agreement so both of them can move forward without additional obstacles getting thrown in the way.
Exactly. Yep.
Jody, we're almost up on our time here. Do you have one more tip for our listeners?
I do, and that tip is basically education. You know, don't just assume that you're going to be able to get this financing done. Call a lender that specializes in working with divorcing clients and make sure they really understand your situation, what's going on, and try to make sure every effort to do that prior to the final divorce settlement agreement, so that if there is something that is going to cause a bump in the road, it can get fixed before it's too late.
So really that divorce lending professional becomes, you develop a relationship with them. This is not a simple transaction. It's going to involve several conversations, and you need to find somebody who you can work with and you feel comfortable working with, and go into this knowing that it's not a 5-minute phone call and done, resolved. It's something that is going to evolve as your divorce evolves.
Yes, and I will say this about the certified divorce lending professionals who have gone through our program. Part of that training is not just the facts, knowing family law, how it interacts, you know, et cetera, but they are really hammered in with being having a lot of empathy for the divorcing clients. Understand that, you know, this is a bumpy road for them anyway,
right.
You know, and how you handle them and how you're talking with them can really make the process so much more, you know, smooth. And I just, you know, there's a lot more of education that goes into them, not just, you know, mortgage financing with divorcing clients. It's really understanding the dynamics.
So Jody, how does one of our listeners find a certified divorce lending professional near them, in their area?
Okay, that's a great question. Yeah, they can visit our website. It's Divorce Lending Association, all spelled out, .com. And there's a button on there that says Member Directory. You know, and there's another link right on the homepage that says Find a CDLP in your area. And it's searchable, you know, so they should be able to find one in, you know, in their state, in their locale, fairly easy.
Great. Well, thank you, Jody. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely.
Listeners, whether you want to keep your marital home or you're looking to buy a new home, don't make assumptions. As Jody says, do your research and start your research early. Knowing what a lender is going to require is going to help you make the right decisions, and it's also going to help you to make sure that your financial settlement is structured in the way that is going to best help you to move forward with your future plans. And that's what we want. Nobody wants to get through the legal process, have the divorce decree in hand, and then find out that what's become a court order won't actually work. So please, listeners, don't let that happen to you. Before we end, I just want to say, if you have a question or a concern or a topic about divorce that you'd like us to talk about on the show, do shoot me an email at mandy@mandywalker.com. I'd love to hear from you. You've been listening to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time for more conversations.